That cheerful music means that it's time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour, where our little discussions of pop culture are entirely for real, but the cocktails are in our imaginations. I'm Linda Holmes from NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I do have a good part of the regular crew with me, but I think we're going to hit a little change at the very end. Let's start over here. You over here, who are you?
I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
All right. How about you over here? Who are you?
I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about comics for Monkey See and review books for the NPR website.
Him I know.
Yeah. Down there, you do not look like Trey Graham, my editor at Monkey See. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I am Barry Hardiman. I am an editor at Talk of the Nation. NPR's Talk of the Nation. I am affiliated with this building. I did not just wander in.
I would just like to point out how disappointed I am in fake Trey.
Fake Trey is...
But this is a cowl neck. I don't understand. I don't know what that means.
Fake Trey is Barry Hardiman. We're so excited.
I am very excited to have Barry Hardiman.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
I've never really cared for Trey.
Yeah, we're trying out replacements. Don't tell him. Don't tell him. He may or may not get his seat back. We're not sure. Now, before we begin today, I did want to mention one thing, which is that 2 weeks ago we had a conversation in this space about possible resurgences for pop culture figures. And one of the things that we talked about was Kurt Gymkhana Thomas.
Mm-hmm. We did. And of course, lo and behold, he's now a massive international
exactly.
star.
Exactly. In the last 2 weeks.
Good job, guys.
In the last 2 weeks.
Mission accomplished.
This is actually why Barry wanted to come on the show. She has her own... person she wants to advocate for at some point, who will hopefully one day be as successful as Kurt Gymkhana Thomas.
But in two weeks. You promised 2 weeks.
That's right. Exactly. But I did have the opportunity, thanks to Glenn Weldon, to see an al fresco rooftop screening of Gymkhana last week.
As it is meant to be seen.
And I...
That was the problem. That was why it was not a massive hit. It was because it could only be screened properly on rooftops.
Right.
As it turns out, if you need to see an outdoor, breezy evening screening of Gymkhana, Glenn Weldon knows a guy.
Yeah. That's Ian Buckwalter. He's a film critic for NPR, and he also writes for DCist, and he has a regular rooftop screening, and he does cheesy movies, and this was cheesetastic. This was the crowning moment, I believe, of the summer.
Was. I remember going through the process of trying to decide whether... This was a coincidence.
Was it a plant?
No, it was a plant. It was a plant. It was Glenn's advocacy.
I had been campaigning for it all summer long, and it's finally, true. Once he heard it on the NPR podcast waves, he broke down.
And it's so, true. Yes.
And some people wield real power.
And I will say...
And a rooftop.
After seeing Gymkhana, I will say that it was great. It was fun. It was one of the most enjoyable evenings I've had in a
disappoint.
Very long time. And it convinced me once and for all that Kurt Gymkhana Thomas is not coming back. Because although cultures change and times change, I do not believe that we have yet reached the point where we are ready as a nation for the short, mullet-wearing gymnast action hero who does not know that you cannot fight the Visigoths of the fictional country of Parmistan.
Parmistan, we learned.
I'm sorry, Parmistan.
Right.
In white sweatpants.
Right. Well, let us agree, Linda Holmes, to disagree about the extent to which you are wrong, which is a tremendous lot.
Well, I'm just saying, if I'm fighting Huns on horseback...
And you are.
I'm not wearing white pants. I don't wear
if you're fighting, don't wear white pants.
Exactly.
Everybody knows that. You never know how nervous you could get.
It's exactly true. No stressful situation. I think Barry would back me up here.
Absolutely.
You don't even wear white pants to like a picnic.
No.
Can you fight the Visigoths after Labor Day?
That's true. I think
there's
it also,
another problem. You've pointed out another problem.
Good one. I think it also was winter.
Yeah, that's
right. But here's what I'm saying is, I mean, in this movie, he winds up fighting a goat.
Yeah.
Sort of.
With gymnastically fighting a goat?
A goat. Well, there is fighting and there is a goat. I don't know that he's technically fighting the goat, but, you know, technically it's technicalities.
No, you said he's fighting a goat. I feel
gymnastically.
Like you're either fighting a goat or you're not fighting a goat.
let's
where did the goat think it was?
He was... He was goat committed. He was in.
He was goat committed. And I'm just saying, I wouldn't even feed a goat in white sweatpants. No. No. Let alone wrestle a goat in white sweatpants. So that's, I just wanted to share those impressions of Gymkhana and assure all of you that when we say that we will, you know, take seriously each other's tastes and thoughts, I mean that.
Wow.
Up
I'm impressed.
To the point where I will watch Gymkhana.
Right. Steven didn't show up. Mike didn't show up. Right. They are collectively dead to me.
That's
but
true.
But Linda.
Send me an invitation. Right, I just want to go for the white sweatpants.
Absolutely.
Next time. That's it.
Next time we screen Gymkhana.
I was
going to
say, I took a rain check.
I think we
figured there would be other chances.
I think we might have to have
when
another
is the
screen.
Late September showing?
<That's right. laughs>
I think we might have to have another show.
You missed the 3:30, but you can be, you're in time for the 4.
Oh, perfect. All right. So now that I have unburdened myself about Gymkhana, we have an abbreviated version of the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz.
We're going to do that first.
Yeah, we're going to do that first.
Whoa. Some crazy mixed chronology stuff.
Hey,
it's like Memento.
There are no rules. There are no rules. You know who taught me that? Kurt Gymkhana. Fighting without rules.
Okay. He has much to teach us all.
Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. Which?
Excuse me. I believe there's a song that goes with Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. Usually we ease our way into it, but now we have to go into it cold. Would you like me to sing the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz theme song?
If you do the pop.
Okay, I'll do the pop. You do the song.
Regrettable Television Pop Quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
Nice.
Very good. Now,
nice.
I am not driving the truck, as we say, that is the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz this week. I am using the assistance of Stephen and Glenn.
You just didn't bring one, is what.
No, pretty
this
much.
Is a fancy way of saying you didn't bring one.
It's a fancy way of saying I completely flaked. And you know why? Because I was watching Hoarders. I was watching the Labor Day Hoarders marathon.
That would do it.
Nothing regrettable there.
No, absolutely not.
Everything is there. So
that's right.
Get regrettable or otherwise.
That's true. And I will say that it always inspires me to clean up my living room.
Well, you were saying to me that you were watching an episode that featured a possum in the living room.
Well, there's a preview that had the possum. And then the actual possum did not show up and apparently is on next week. And there's going to be like an internet revolt because...
We were promised possums.
We were That's promised right. a possum in the promo. And then there was no possum scene. There was just a lot of garbage. But
actually,
no
very similar to my Regrettable Television Pop Quiz.
All right, hit
There's
it,
There's a lot
Steven.
Of garbage
Go
in
nuts.
Mine.
Is
hit
there
it,
a
Steven.
Possum?
I've never met a person in my life like that boy. He's so talented and he's such a beautiful person. He's like the modern day Shakespeare, but better and cuter.
All right, wait. I know what this one is. I know what this one is, but I'm not going to tell. Anyone else can guess?
I saw it on the clip thing, so it's up to you, Barry.
Oh, God.
This happens to be from Bachelor Pad,
yes.
which
wow.
is the spinoff of The Bachelor, which Stephen and I are guilty of having talked about on the podcast before, but it gives you so much
We're already
much
repeating
great
Regrettable Television in
yeah,
like
but
episode 7.
But it gives you such great material that you can't help it.
So an aspiring country music singer named Wes is singing his song. Which goes a little something like, they say that love don't come easy, which is just the most hackneyed country song ever. And next to Wes is Gia.
Oh, yeah.
Who has fallen for him, in spite of the fact that Wes, having been on the show before and been a gigantic D-bag, is a gigantic D-bag.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the real names?
Yes.
They have not been changed. Right.
To protect the...
the incredibly stupid and bumbling.
The thing about Wes and Gia, to me, is that he's horrible and she's horrible, and yet I feel sorry for her.
Right. And part of it for me is that I did not feel that she was horrible in her original... season.
But she's horrible in the way that anyone who would go on The Bachelor and then on The Bachelor again is horrible.
Well, I mean, basically...
Well, but also The Bachelor Pad, which is, you know, a device by which to really make people truly terrible.
Right.
Well,
except for Tenley.
I think this is part... Except for Tenley. Now, wait, you knew about Tenley.
Somebody
you
knows
knew about
a little
Tenley.
Bit about
I'm a journalist. I read Us Weekly. For goodness sake.
Somebody thanks. Knows a little bit about Bachelor Pad.
To me, part of what is interesting about The Bachelor Pad is that The Bachelor, as a franchise has suddenly, fairly recently, become America's soap opera in kind of an interesting way, to the point where The Bachelor, like season 6, was not all over the cover of Us Weekly every single week. It was sort of a footnote. And you would hear people talk on the show as if they were going to be tabloid superstars because they came in 8th on The Bachelor.
Right.
And you're like, silly. No, nobody cares about The Bachelor. Now, they actually kind of do.
Right.
What's interesting about The Bachelor pad is that The Bachelor itself, I think, has always been fairly moralistic.
Yes.
Very moralistic.
Got a real 80s sense of...
And it also has this sort of... For lack of a better word, it's kind of like a boutique reality show a little bit. Not the way Project Runway or Top Chef are really good reality shows.
Right.
But that it's a show that kind of takes itself seriously.
Yeah.
And there's sort of they would bring out contestants who are virgins. You know,
yeah,
who would inevitably...
there's a lot of even the production values. There's a lot of Vaseline.
A lot of gauzy.
And on the lens this time.
Right. The Vaseline is used entirely on the lenses.
Only for that, because it's the virgins.
Right. And of course, the virgin would get, as soon as she announces herself as a virgin, she would get figuratively thrown into the volcano.
Right.
But at the same time, there was very much this sort of like, you know, oh, you know, you are a woman of ill repute because you have, you know, you are divorced. Oh, divorced.
Yes. Or people will spend, like, you know, weeks and weeks working up to, like, how will I tell her I have a kid?
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, ooh, how will you share this scandalous secret?
So what is the setup of The Bachelor pad? How is it different than what you're talking about?
Basically, in The Bachelor, everyone is aspiring to be the mate of one very sort of deified...
Moron.
Right.
And
no chest hair. Ever.
No.
A waxy chested, square jawed dullard.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Who,
dead eyed dullard.
But like, it'll be like a third string quarterback.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a bass fisherman.
It's very true. Very
pilot.
Or a pilot, in the case of Jake.
Would you ever want to fly in his plane? I mean, and I don't mean that in any other word.
Would I?
Really need to, I mean, please. But go ahead.
Yeah, you don't realize, you don't want your pilot to turn out to have had rage issues.
Yeah.
No. So, whereas on Bachelor Pad, they brought together a bunch of the male cast-offs and a bunch of the female cast-offs. Everybody from people who only lasted like 3 episodes, but they were interesting, by which the show means talked about.
Mm-hmm. By which they mean crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Up to people who maybe came in like 2nd.
Right.
So it's a...
And managed to sort of preserve some of their dignity. In the
and process. They're just thrown in together and see, it's just like...
Well,
and
basically,
then
they wind
do.
Up living in a... They have to sleep in the same room and there are stupid competitions.
It's like the real world for... kids that are a little bit older, you know, for and some of him, you know.
But they're also the elimination quality.
Yeah. So it's more like Road Rules. Sorry. It's like real world Road Rules challenge.
And every week, I believe...
This is how we know Barry fits in, by the way. This is how you're relating to this show.
I relate to everything.
I believe that every week the men vote off a woman and the women vote off a man.
Uh-huh.
And then in the most recent episode, they sort of en masse dump a few of the extra women in order to even them out. And now it's couples, which has turned it into Married by America.
Right.
but basically, The Bachelor takes itself very, very, very seriously.
Because it's about love,
Because it's about love. It's the most dramatic rose ceremony ever. So seriously, gumming up.
Basically, it's impossible, I should point out, for Stephen and I to watch The Bachelor without every single commercial break saying, coming up.
Which I always do as if I have a cold. It's always gumming up.
Well, that's makes you feel a little bit like, into that register. It's the only way to push all that. You're going to go through the mucus.
I'm sorry. So, yes. Yeah, so, The Bachelor takes itself very seriously.
This is like, on a trashiness scale, it is slightly classier than Rock of Love Bus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It is, I watch it and I want to put my glasses over my contacts to provide more of a barrier so as not to contract chlamydia of the eyes.
That's true. But what I think is interesting about The Bachelor pad, actually, as a concept, is that, as you're saying, you know, the Bachelor is this serious, serious thing about love and commitment, and it was so 80s, sort of early 90s, you know, even the rose itself, I mean, really, that's
kind of romance novel.
Yeah, I mean, it had all that. I mean, the last one was called On the Wings of Love. On the Wings of Love. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And I feel like The Bachelor pad just
pushed it into this decade. Like, this was a thing. Oh, we need to get more possible sexual hookups.
Well, it's also in the first couple seasons of The Bachelor, there was always this discussion of, I can't believe how many women he's kissing.
Right. Right.
And now there's a contest in which they have to line them up and blindfold them and make out with
that
each
is
other.
Very true.
It is not your mother's bachelor.
That is true.
So compare and contrast Big Brother and this. This sounds pretty much the same thing.
Well, right. I mean, it's
except
it's
that you're meant to. Yeah. I mean, it is really a harem. I mean, you're really meant to, you know, to see these people. You know.
In Big Brother is less sex oriented.
Right. Yeah. Big Brother is there are inevitable, like, really grody hookups on Big Brother, but this is just, it's all about the hookups, and it's just how quickly they've chosen to degrade. I mean, I didn't think, it's sort of like Sarah Bunting was saying, how you can't tarnish The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. The Apprentice is tarnished. I thought The Bachelor could not be tarnished until this.
It's literally
as if NPR decided to take like four little known personalities and have them talk about stupid crap.
Right.
Is a travesty.
Right into the same microphones used by respectable.
Right, respectable journalists talk into those microphones about like wars and elections.
Right. But man, you got to that in a very sneaky way. I was not with you there until the very end, but you've done very well, and I commend you on your entry to the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. And I apologize for not having my own.
Well, I think Glenn brought one. Is that true?
All right. Yep. What did you bring, Glenn?
All right.
We're gonna win.
We're the Nana Queens.
Let's go sell some banana pudding right now.
We are we are going to do whatever it takes.
We are grandma.
We love heavy metal.
We love hamburgers.
Oh, burgers.
So any ideas?
Wow.
Bananas and pudding.
Right.
So some sort of food related.
Sell some bananas and some pudding.
Oh, it's a food truck race.
It is.
Oh,
in fact.
Is it called food truck race thing?
It is called the Great Food Truck Race, and I have two problems.
I was very close.
Really
Tom,
very close. I would say like that's close enough.
Yeah, that's back. Very close.
No, that's an A.
I have two problems with the title, because it's not a race. They just go en masse to a city, sit there, and set up and try to sell lots of food. Not a race.
Not a race.
No. And great is a very strong word. Let's just call it food trucks, because that's what the show's about. It's about
food
like
truck exclamation point.
It's seven or eight food trucks that, you know, they go from city to city. So the way you make this show is you take everything that's awesome about The Amazing Race, the human drama, the teams sort of competing to challenge themselves.
The loving, the learning,
the hugging.
The excitement.
The challenging themselves physically and emotionally. Take
the
all that out.
Exciting parts of the world.
Exactly.
Right. The incredible visuals.
The foreign locations. No, we don't. Let's do this on the cheap. Let's do this here in America. So you take that stuff out, all that stuff, because that just makes for compelling television. Who wants that?
Right.
You take out the variety of challenges. Just make them do the same thing over and over, week after week. But you add in, and this is something that The Amazing Race very rarely does, you add in the pulse-pounding thrill of talking about parking.
Now I'm hooked,
If that's your favorite part of The Amazing Race.
Literally, this show is, oh my God, we should park over there. Look at all the car traffic over there. We should park over there. I can't believe. And then the confessionals are even better because they're like, I can't believe we parked where I told her not to park there. That's this show.
That's amazing.
It's awful. But if you want to be sort of on the forefront, because, I mean, how many cupcake shows are there now? 27?
Mm-hmm.
You know, cupcakes are over.
Yes.
But if you want to be in on this whole food truck thing, you could say that you watched The Great Food Truck Race because it's the Food Network. They're going to be throwing all kinds of food truck shows at you any day now. And you can say, you know, when there is someday a food truck president, you can say, I was there.
So what would the other
food... Will there be a cupcake president? Wait a minute. What
well,
is this?
No, we passed that prime. Cupcakes are over.
What would be the other food truck show names like? Keep on food trucking.
Yes, exactly. And
food truck...
Truck you would be good.
Truck you
with a U, and it'd be university teaching how to do food trucks. The one thing that's interesting...
Yeah.
Is there are different food trucks. Of course, there's the Vietnamese sandwich one. And these people...
That's, oh, Food Drive.
Yeah, that's good. Food Drive is good.
So I'm sorry, God.
They're hip, they're skinny, they're cute, they're really media savvy. So when they're coming to a town like Santa Fe, New Mexico, they call ahead to the Santa Fe paper and say, we're a food truck coming to your town. And because evidently nothing ever happens in Santa Fe, New Mexico...
I was going
to
say, stop the presses!
They get an article and the line is around the block. So they're like the front runner,
but
right?
But you can use... Because usually on these shows, you can't... you can't use your friends, you can't use social media, but you don't even have access to the internet.
Right.
The rules seem pretty lax. Let me just put it that way. My favorite thing, and this is the underdog guy, because you know me, I love an underdog. Mm-hmm. Got
especially
the
where
thing.
Food trucks are concerned.
This is a guy who is making authentic French food. So it's a food truck.
Ah, oui.
So he goes to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he's making, you know...
Which he calls Saint Fe.
Saint Fe. And, of course, he's going up to tourists who are waddling through the downtown parts of Santa Fe. And this is what you want in the hot desert heat of Santa Fe. You want a cream sauce. A nice, heavy cream sauce. You got the chipotle peppers. Give me a béarnaise. But to get people to come to his truck, he has this strategy. And the strategy is, I'm going to do an escargot lollipop.
Oh.
Now,
so
what is an escargot
piping
lollipop?
Piping hot snail?
Wow.
Anybody, any guesses what an escargot lollipop entails?
You're just going to shove that stick right into the snail, yeah?
You are going to impale mollusks on a skewer.
Yep.
And then just sort of proffer it,
waggle it,
and just sort of say, he's like he's a feudal warlord who hates snails. Yeah. He's like, I am going to put your bodies on my battlements. Stay away, snails.
Yeah.
Stay away from the food truck.
So if he doesn't like a snail, then it gets paraded around the kingdom on a stick.
Wait, but how do you do the good part, the butter?
Well, I mean, you know,
he's, is there, you meant to just dip it up?
I guess
just
stripping off.
Like a pool of blood.
I mean, it's not raw snail. I mean, he does cook it. But I mean, it's just this weirdest, escargot lollipop is how we're going to do it.
Oh, God.
Escargot lollipop.
I mean,
incidentally, that is going to be the name of my experimental band. Escargot lollipop.
Oh, yes.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever
heard. And I'm going to say it like that.
Very lame show.
Escargot lollipop.
We don't watch it, but it's fun.
Yes. Since I completely fell down on the job of contributing to Regrettable Television Pop Quiz, stop rubbing it in, Stephen Thompson. I will set myself up to go first in this other round, which is something that is making you happy this week.
Wait.
That doesn't get a pop, Thompson. And what I'm going to talk about this week is actually not a new thing. It's not that it's making me happy freshly just now. It's something that always, always makes me happy. And that is Judge Judy.
Yay. Aww. I know you love Judge Judy.
Now, here's the first thing you need to know about Judge Judy. Judge Judy, according to a recent TV Guide list of highest paid TV celebrities, makes $45 million a year.
Holy
for
bananas.
Her syndicated show.
Really? Wow.
That is more than Jay Leno. It is more than David Letterman. It is three times what they pay Ryan Seacrest to host American Idol.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It
does
is...
Does Seacrest know?
Next time he's going to like have his own judge show, he's going to be like, so?
I bet.
So Judge Judy is
was
truly...
That, wait, was that your Ryan Seacrest impression?
I was actually... I was so happy that we were going to skip over it. At any rate, she is an empire unto herself. And I
$45 million.
That's incredible.
A year.
$45 million.
That's legitimately amazing.
That's what it said.
Wow. Buys a lot of lace doilies. It's
now, in addition to the fact that Judge Judy is awesome in the sense that she is apparently setting herself up to take over the world Lex Luthor style.
Yeah.
There is a certain brilliance to Judge Judy in that it is one of the most educational things you can actually watch on television. You can go to the Discovery Channel and you can learn about plants and animals. You can go to Mad Men and learn about the subtleties of the human condition. But when you watch Judge Judy, you learn do not do things that will blow up in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Do not loan anybody money who can't get credit.
Mm-hmm.
You learn do not... bail your daughter's boyfriend out of jail.
Oh, yeah.
Never put anyone else's car or car insurance in your name under any circumstances. Never add anyone to your cell phone plan. Ooh. Never loan money to anyone you like.
Wait, is this why you don't let me use your prescriptions?
Yes. So this is where you get the actual best life lessons on television is from Judge Judy. She is one of the few people where you can tell that if a person comes in who is the kind of person who runs around the world making trouble for others and paying no price for it, mm-hmm. she will somehow extract a price from this person. Your petty vandal, your small-time con artist, your disreputable repair person.
Your housewife of New Jersey. How can we make that happen?
Oh, I only wish. I only wish.
That's the perfect
and
marriage.
And there are, most of all, she hates people who take advantage of other people. And although she will sometimes leave you on the hook if you have allowed yourself to be taken advantage of in a way that she cannot fix, she will give it to the other person for taking advantage of you. There is a famous YouTube clip that I encourage everyone to seek out.
We should link to it on the blog.
We will. In which she has a case involving a woman who put an ad on eBay to sell two cell phones. And then when she was paid for them, she sent pictures of the cell phones and said that actually all she sold you was a photocopied picture of the cell phone. And so that's all you're getting for your $200.
This envelope came,
correct,
along with these pictures of the cell phones.
That's exactly what was in there.
Okay.
The eBay auction is in my name.
Oh, good. So you are responsible for this?
Yes.
Explain it.
It states very clearly in the auction that this is for a photo only. I sent her the photo.
Show me where it says that. Show me where it says that.
Because somewhere in the ad it says this picture is of these cell phones something.
That's
brilliant. As you might
Judy. Judge Judy, for whatever reason, did not take her side.
Barry's over there like, retirement plan.
I know.
I forget what the exact view count is on this YouTube video, but it is very extensive because she sits there and she tells this woman, you're an idiot. You're a criminal. You are a degenerate.
Listen to me. You're a thief because your husband said to her, thank you for the shopping
spree. My husband never said that to her.
Absolutely did.
No, he didn't.
Absolutely did. Because I believe that if you are married to this man, and the two of you not only unfortunately married to each other, two scammers, but created children together, that's unfortunate for the children. You're a thief. Outrageous. You are outrageous, madam. Why don't you get a job?
And it's one of those things where this is the kind of person who makes trouble for everyone and usually pays very little price for it.
Right.
And she just gets in there and just sock, sock, sock. She just gives it to him. It's incredibly satisfying.
Yep.
You know, I often say of the sort of reality television that I enjoy, that what I enjoy about it is that I like watching jerks get their comeuppance mm-hmm. once in a while.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And every once in a while, you know, you wind up getting sucked into an elimination-based reality show in which the big question is, will the jerks mm-hmm. get their comeuppance? Mm-hmm. And I hope the jerks get their comeuppance. And I think what you're saying about Judge Judy, which I have not spent nearly as much time with as you have, is you get to watch jerks get smacked around by a smart, take-no-guff lady.
Pretty much, that's the entire business plan.
Right.
That's the entire Judge Judy business plan.
That is worth $45
million. That is worth $45
million. People love watching jerks get smacked around.
People love watching jerks get smacked around. And as I said, I'm telling you, life lessons.
Right.
You know, if your kid did everything that Judge Judy says to do, your kid would be much better off than if they followed almost any other human being on television.
Including their actual parents, if you're my kids.
Exactly. And they would never, you know, these are going to be the kids who are not going to move in with their boyfriend after 4 weeks and let him start using their credit card.
Mm-hmm.
All those things that you just wish people wouldn't do that you go, oh, why are you doing that?
Yeah,
you would
well,
not do
where
that.
She earns her $45 million, it's not a catchphrase-based show. She mm-hmm. kind of goes in and addresses the specific issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a time after I graduated from grad school and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was laying around the house watching a lot of Judge Judy. I couldn't figure out why I was so sort of addicted to it. And what it was, I wanted her to yell at me.
Mm-hmm.
Not the jerks. I wanted her to kind of reach out of the television and say, what the hell are you doing? So eventually she did. And now I am here.
Yeah.
And look how far you've come.
That is an inspiring story.
Nice.
So that's what's making me happy this week and every week is Judge Judy. Mm. Now, I'm going to go next to Barry so that she can fill us with her genius.
Well, yeah. I have to say this is an embarrassing. I'm embarrassed to bring this. There are actually two things
there's
that are
no.
Me.
This is a shame-free zone.
Okay, but here's the thing. And I was talking to Lynn about this earlier. First of all, there's one thing that would normally embarrass me that is making me happy today, specifically, which is Lady Gaga.
Absolutely.
Because in about an hour and a half, I will be one of the little monsters outside the Verizon Center in costume, possibly, going to see her show.
And I have a quick question
yes.
for you, Barry. Is it or is it not true that you can be spotted in the famous NPR Lady Gaga.
So famous.
Very
right?
Just superstar.
Is that true?
That incredible
podcast
fame.
Podcast listeners, if you do not, if you have not seen the Lady Gaga telephone video, all you need to do is watch it. Look for the woman in the red shirt dancing on the rooftop
who
of NPR.
Knows what she is
the one
doing.
To learn how it is to be done.
Speaking, she's the
watch
Judge Judy of
yes.
Right,
dancing.
I am showing them how it's done. Yes, I
mercilessly outed you.
That is actually truly merciless. But it does make me feel a little better about what I was going to wear tonight. So that's good. I'm already out there, so that's good. So normally, you know, Lady Gaga, she's a little, you know, she's been out there for so long, she's so old, but the thing is
she's
that
so she's old.
Well,
God,
she's so but thin. She's been around for a while, you know, that
like
she's been in the
months.
Yeah, but the
I know that's like literally 600 million news cycles in this day and age, but
it feels like she's, you know, that everybody knows everything about her, and it's, but the thing is that when one isn't suddenly in possession of the tickets, and I did not know I was going to be in possession of these tickets, the sudden wave of feeling that comes over you is really actually quite amazing, and that's you would awesome. Be surprised, by the way, listening audience, how many people from NPR will be attending this concert.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
In various stages of undress, I'm sure. So, you know, you probably want to get your way out there. But the thing that's embarrassing me that's making me happy this week is because this is so dorky and everybody likes it, and I didn't want to be this girl. But here's the thing. That book, that Jonathan Franzen book, Freedom... It's the only thing I can think about. I mean, it is literally the only thing I can think about. It is genuinely good. And it's the kind of thing where you're like, oh, God, am I going to be the person that says, what are you reading? Well, Freedom, and it's fabulous, just like they all said. I don't know if you saw the New York Times. There's many, many big words to describe it. I could, too. But the thing is it's really friggin' good. So, yeah. You know, I mean, it's like I feel like I've capitulated. It's like the summer I suddenly realized that the girl with the hair on fire and dragon tattoos and whatnot is actually super-duper fun to read, and that I had come on
the girl
with
her hair on fire is the little-known fourth installment.
I think her hair is actually at some point on fire in this. But the thing is when you're at the beginning of a craze, it's less exciting when you're the person who suddenly discovered it at the end of it. So I was sort of okay with being the last Stieg Larsson convert. Right.
I'm definitely that way with literacy.
But you were on the front end with Freedom because you had read Freedom. I had read Freedom by the time it essentially came out.
This is one of my perks, my big perks at NPR. Yes.
Well, that's kind of a big deal.
You are a big deal.
I have big books. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, no, it has actually, in terms of, you know, one knowing oneself, it has things in common with Lady Gaga. The two are actually not completely unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
So I urge you to go ahead and spend that 831 pages.
Oh, that
or whatever.
Is not
going to
happen.
That might be a random number that I've thrown out.
And I will say, I am in the middle of reading Freedom. I've not finished it. I'm about a quarter of the way through it. My Kindle will always tell me exactly where I am in the book. I believe I am at something like 27%. And
that is frustrating about the Kindle is not knowing a page number. I'm always like, I'm at 2765.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's a location number. Right. It's like a zip code in Kindle.
Yeah.
But it is it's one of those books where I have a little trouble attaching to the story in full. But the writing is truly, you do just sort of sit there and admire the writing at times. And most of the time, it's not in the bad way. Most of the time, it's not in the way where you think this writing is showing off how great it is.
Right.
Look at Wordsy McGee.
Right. Most of the time, it's to the right degree. So I don't think you have anything to feel bad about.
I think, by the way, that
I'm glad that you do feel bad, though. It shows that you're in the right room.
Yeah, exactly. I have shame about everything.
Yeah.
I do think that there is a point in the book where you stop noticing how beautifully it's written, and you start just going, oh my God, what is going to happen to the Berglunds?
Yeah, well, so. I hope I'm going to get to that part soon, because the story part's lagging a little, a tiny bit in story, but it's so beautiful. I mean, the language is so impressive. And every now and then, you just hit these points where you think that is such an economic description of a character in particular.
Right.
I mean, it is a way of really just taking a very small number of words and really, really communicating who a person is.
It
even
is
if it's
epitome.
A person who's just being used briefly.
Right. It is really psychologically realistic fiction in that way of like, here's a brain.
Yeah,
this is what it looks like inside, and you feel it too.
Definitely.
Yeah, well, I'm in a self-imposed media blackout about this book because I just want to kind of digest it myself without having it all sort of fed
to
me.
Smart.
Like is happening right
so,
now.
So, thanks, guys.
Exactly. Lie down and I'll kick you.
All right, well, Glenn, since we can't make it up to you, why don't you tell us what is making you happy this week?
All right, well, I am the NPR Monkey See Comics blogger, and we've been doing this 6 weeks now.
He's the one who says it this way.
Yes,
I don't
do.
Say it this way.
So I have brought the book that is making me happy.
We're all looking at it right now.
It's Michael Kupperman. It's called Tales Designed to Thrizzle, Volume 6, actually issue number 6, because this is an actual honest-to-God comic book. It's not a graphic novel, so you can't be all Mr. Posey, oh, I read graphic novels. This is a comic book, okay?
It is a comic book.
And it is. You know, a lot of comics are fun. That's kind of why I read them. Precious few are funny. And this guy is doing some very odd, but some very wonderful stuff. It's not really conducive to podcasting. But let me just
allow me to describe the picture.
Charades! Right.
So there's a story called, it's a bunch of little stories. He's riffing on 50s and 60s commercial art and sort of weird Dada-esque things. So there's a story called Jungle Princess, which features a sort of jungle princess, as you might imagine, in a bikini, a leopard's print bikini, but she also has a pointy princess hat. And she goes around and she says things like, cease your nefariousness.
Oh, I'm keeping that.
There is a parody of a Western comic called Cowboy Oscar Wilde, and he is leading a posse. And I'm showing this around like it's story time here. And he says, ignorance is like a delicate flower, podner. Touch it, and the bloom is done gone and skedaddle. Yeehaw. There's an ad for Ben's Warehouse of Cursed Savings in the back, like old comics used to have advertisements in the back. And one of the things you could buy at the slightly cursed merchandise mart is soup that moans a little, three for a dollar. This rake cries out for vengeance, $2.99, so just ignore it. A blender with a grudge for $6.99, and the tagline is, it works fine, so what if it mutters? And my favorite, whispering toilet paper, five for a buck. You won't be able to understand it anyway. It's foreign. So we have Mark Twain and Albert Einstein going into space to kind of attack some asteroid a la Armageddon. And we also have a potboiler, which is called, you want to read that out there, Linda?
It says all about drainage.
It's all about drainage. This is a hell of a lot of fun. So that's one thing that's making me happy. The other thing that's making me happy, I have a little thing very quickly.
Ooh, I've got two.
Oh.
The thing that's making me happy is what I'm about to do right now, which is to hand Linda Holmes
a copy of The Hobbit. Which, let the listeners know that this is my own treasured limited edition version of The Hobbit. That is, it's sort of a gold, what do you call that?
It's embossed?
It's embossed, yes. Does it have a slipcase? Oh, yes, it has a slipcase. This is a hardback version, a limited 50th anniversary edition of The Hobbit, which includes the maps,
the all-important maps. Remember how important the maps are.
Middle Earth.
This happened because he's afraid. I told him that I might read it on the Kindle.
You can't read it on the Kindle.
Really upset because it wouldn't have the maps.
It also includes some of his watercolors that he's done.
So you have no excuse now, young Linda Holmes.
I will definitely think about it.
Wait, is this your first foray into Middle Earth at all?
Oh, yes.
My God, you do need a map.
I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true.
That's amazing.
So both those things make me
happy.
That's
true. That's thank you, Glenn.
I have a full bestiary, if you need a guide to the creatures.
Barry, we could compare bestiaries.
I just want you to know that I was completely unprepared for this wonderful loner. Mm-hmm. And I am.
Clearly a loner. That's not good. Crazy.
Well, I was going to say this wonderful gift, and then I thought, his head's going to fly off. I think I'm keeping it. Anyway, I very much appreciate that, Glenn, and I promise I will read The Hobbit like a good girl. Just like
I can't wait for the tweets. Oh, God.
It will be awesome.
God.
All right, Stephen
Thompson.
Tell you what,
I'll make a deal. Linda, if you read The Hobbit, I will read that comic book.
No.
That sounds really funny.
All right, that I can do.
That is completely unfair.
What, nobody wants to read Freedom?
That's right.
I'm just totally ripped off.
Read the room. Read the room.
Well, this is a perfect segue, not wanting to read Freedom, into what is making me happy, which is the wonderful outpouring of kind suggestions that I have received in response to last week's call out. Last week, for those of you who have not listened to it, I went on a lengthy spiel about Insane Clown Posse and how much I knew about Insane Clown Posse in relation to how little I know about the act of reading books. I have a college degree. I sling words mm-hmm. as part of
true.
My job. I have had a literary agent,
mm-hmm.
but I just never sit down and read them. I have books on my nightstand. They sit when I open them, they'll make a sound mm-hmm, of, mm-hmm. of the spine uh-huh. cracking. So I've received dozens of incredibly kind responses mm-hmm. and wanted to go over a couple of them.
What was the email address for anyone who might still want to send you one?
That's true. I might ultimately read another book. We'll see. I don't know that we're going to make up our minds.
Might one day read another book.
I don't know that we're going to make up our minds about what I'm going to read. So the email address is stephenreadsabook@gmail.com, and Stephen is spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N. So I got an email here from Nadine Anheuser with the subject line, "Reading is for nerds. Awesome nerds." And I will read it now. It says, "Listen, I'm going with my gut here. Try not to judge. The first book that popped into my head when you asked for a relevant recommendation was Pretty Little Liars. You may have heard of it. It is a young adult novel." I noticed that many people recommend young adult novels.
Well, you did ask for something shorter than Green Eggs and Ham.
They're awesome.
"About a popular girl who is dead and possibly haunting her former friends. You asked for relevant, not good. There's a lot of great product placement from 2007, too. It is also a TV show now, so I think it ties in well with..." Everybody abbreviates it PCHH, which mm-hmm. I like to pronounce...
Right. Voiceless fricative, actually. It's called voiceless fricative.
"For most glasses-wearing reader types, this book takes about 20 minutes to read. Since you are clearly some sort of nerd jock, I'm guessing it will take you 2 hours, at least. Plus, it has a Barbie on the cover. Consider it, and good luck, Nadine."
Mm-hmm.
So that's one suggestion. What I've noticed, there's a clear plurality.
Mm-hmm.
I got here Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil mm-hmm. Gaiman. That's from our one listener who wishes the show were longer. Thank you so much, Dana Iwata. I think you may be overruled.
She's got no plurality there.
I've had several people recommend, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, mm. and obviously the Stieg Larsson books, because they're sort of on everyone's lips and people love them. And okay, here's the one that the most people have recommended, and mm. perhaps one of you, you're smarties.
I think Barry's going to know this one.
Barry's going to know this book.
Oh, no.
A clear plurality has recommended The Hunger Games.
I told you Barry.
So that's a yes, then, Barry?
That is actually a thing that made me very happy last week, because The Mockingjay, the third novel
right.
in that series, came out last week.
And when her books.
And when I was having this conversation, during which my eyes glazed over, the topic of Mockingjay came up, and there was all this like blah 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 plot point from Mockingjay. Mm. I read the where are you in Mockingjay?
Right.
Blah blah blah. And I had no idea what they were talking about, and was just waiting for them to get back to eating or Juggalos
or the bachelor pad.
So you sort of feel pad. Like this would actually sort of fulfill your original mission.
So I feel like, mm. and it's also, am I correct in saying it is a young adult?
It is a YA novel. It is, it is also a phenomenon beyond YA. And I object to the characterization of YA as being only for young adults. It can be for old adults
as well. Because I'm pretty grizzled.
Right, right. Well, we both are. Here, let me tell you why you're going to like The Hunger Games. And actually, it's funny. After I read them, I begged my husband to read it, and he said, "Fine, I'll read one of your teenage books." And he's really into it. Here's why. Because at the end of every single chapter, there is a reversal of fortune that will make you draw in your breath like this.
Wow.
I mean, it is. She is the queen of the cliffhanger.
She being...
is Suzanne Collins, the author.
Okay.
And it's also about pop culture in a way. It's a series about pop culture.
Here is my hesitation, and mm-hmm. you can speak to my hesitation,
yeah.
is that a lot of people who recommended it are sort of like, it speaks to the vapid, hollow nature of reality. I love vapid, hollow reality television.
I
don't want it to speak to...
Stephen, I watched the second part of The Real Housewives of New Jersey reunion at 6:30 a.m. So, I am a person who I'm really in the depths of despair when it comes to reality TV. So I actually wouldn't describe it as speaking to reality TV so much as... it's more about power relationships and how you can use media in power relationships. But I don't even want to say that. It's just a great yarn.
Yeah.
It's about a girl who can shoot.
See, no,
and
no,
she's
you're
awesome.
Totally, no, see, here's what you're doing it exactly
yeah.
right. Don't speak to a larger intellectual purpose.
No.
Okay.
And actually, you really don't have to do that. It's just a shooting,
she's telling
you. Yeah, it's a great... And here's the... Oh, here's the thing I really, really love about this heroine, is here's what's great about her. She is... You know, she's super cool, all of these things. She has absolutely no powers. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. She does. There's no special fantasy, anything. She's just real good at hitting a deer. You know, at
Glenn's
hitting
over
a,
here. Like, is there something wrong with powers?
Well, listen. I mean, again, I'll go back to the Tolkien bestiary. We can talk about that later. I'm not against powers, but I as in part of this, you got to love a heroine who has really just gotten better at something through practice. Yeah. You know, and you know,
you mean
just,
like I am with literacy?
Like you're
it
trying
just
to be?
Takes practice. It is one of the most perfectly plotted novels I have read of any age. It
I
will
think
just
should, yeah.
push
yeah,
you
I
through
think,
it.
I think that's.
I think we have a winner.
Right, resolved.
Yeah,
I think we. Have
I'm
a
not
winner.
Saying I'm going to have read it by next week.
No.
Stephen reads The Hunger Games.
Stephen will read The Hunger Games. But in the meantime, if you have other book recommendations, please email them to stephenreadsabook@gmail.com.
Let me just say I was impressed by the variety in that list. These people listening to this are pretty smart. Because they named several of my favorites. They named Kevin Brockmeyer, who's a really great, really funny writer. They named the Gary Steingart book, which is a lot of fun.
That's a great book.
Miranda July, which I was surprised to see in there, but some really weird, but really beautiful, lovely writing. Her book, I can't remember the name of it, but it's great. And it was a really good cross-section of of.
And I noticed that, I think Leaves of Grass, the Danielewski, came up twice.
Yeah.
That I found amazing. I did not know that people still, that was a book that was still
leaves
on people's...
Leaves of Grass or House of Leaves?
House of Leaves.
I was
going to
say, somebody did recommend Walt Whitman.
Barbaric.
Shows how smart I is. Yeah. No, but I'm very impressed with listeners that still have that book on their shelves.
I was very pleased with the variety and the...
The compliments?
No, the variety and also just the volume of the response. Everybody was very good about sending you suggestions.
I have to say I've been very surprised at how much I like our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, me too.
And with that.
That brings us to the end of another Pop Culture Happy Hour. I thank everybody for coming, especially Barry.
Yay!
Thank you so much for having me.
We so much appreciate coming
Next
by.
Time I'll wear my white pants.
Yay. Absolutely, you should.
Now I'm not scared.
Is there a way to reach Barry on Twitter?
I don't know. Is there a way to reach Barry on Twitter?
There is a way to reach Barry on Twitter, but don't expect, but yes.
There's a way to read Barry on Twitter.
Right. Well, actually, it's probably better to reach than to read, because I'm not good with the thing. But B. Hardigan. It's,
You're not good with thumbs.
No. It's not I'm all thumbs. It's B. Hardiman, B-H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. That is a way to reach me.
How about you, Stephen?
I'm on Twitter at I dislike Stephen, spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
How about you, Glenn Weldon?
I am at G-H Weldon.
And you can follow the tweets from the blog at NPR Monkey C and our producer, Mike Katziff, Mike K-A-T-Z-I-F. And Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our awesome music, which we always like.
Which is fantastic.
Which we always like to, because we do love it. It's probably going ching-a-ling-a-ling right now. That's it for Pop Culture Happy Hour, and thanks to everybody for tuning in.